Our gospel reading this morning is a section that continues pretty much the theme that we have been following the last several weeks of Jesus instructing his disciples. This particular one deals with some of the difficulties that they encounter as they try to go forward to do their ministry. Jesus has sent them out with the gifts of the Spirit to go out and preach to the world and bring them the message of God, and they feel the challenge. It's chapter 9, verse 38. John said to Jesus, "Teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we tried to stop him because he is not one of our following." But Jesus said, "Do not stop him, for no one who does a deed of power in my name will be able soon afterward to speak evil of me. Whoever is not against us is for us. For truly I tell you, whoever gives you a cup of water to drink because you bear the name of the Christ will by no means lose the reward. If any of you put a stumbling block before one of these little ones who believe in me, it would be better for you if a great millstone were hung around your neck and you were thrown into the sea. If your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life maimed than to have two hands and to go to hell, to the unquenchable fire. And if your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life lame than to have two feet and to be thrown into hell. And if your eye causes you to stumble, tear it out. It is better for you to enter the kingdom of God with one eye than to have two eyes and to be thrown into hell, where their worm never dies and the fire is never quenched." The Gospel of the Lord. This gospel passage, as it is written, suggests something that happens in the gospel writing every so often. That it's a collection of sayings. Probably these are unrelated statements made by Jesus that get lumped together in kind of a little paragraph to kind of put in all that Jesus had to say and all the words that he may have offered to us as direction. So to kind of pull this apart a little bit, you recognize that these are not necessarily sequential things. They are somehow related only in the general teaching of Jesus. The first issue that Jesus deals with is the fact that someone else other than the following is doing something in their name, and they find fault with that. Not unlike everything in our lives where somebody is doing something that we hold and treasure, and they're doing it very well, and we may have pause and question, you know, how dare they do this when this is so important to us, or it is part of our heritage, part of our treasure, part of our custom, part of our tradition. How dare that person do that? The important thing, I think, here, and this is a backdrop to everything else we're going to say, if somebody is not against you, they are for you. You can't be kind of mediocre. You're either with us or you're not. And if they're doing supportive things, then they belong with you. The second thing that we deal with is this whole thing about being maimed and lame and blind. If really we follow the gospel literally, there would be very few people who weren't maimed, lame, and blind at this stage of our lives. Because the reality is that this touches all of us. And Jesus is not talking so much about the legs and the hands and the feet and the eyes. He's talking about what comes out of us. In another part of the gospel, he says, it's not what you present outside that matters. Is what comes out from inside of you that tells us really what's going on inside of you. And certainly if we go into the world of psychology, that is very true. We can tell what is happening inside the heart and soul of an individual by some of the behavioral things they do or the way they handle various situations in their lives. Maybe the rage or the anger they have, or maybe the addictive personality they have, or the perfectionist attitude they have. All of that comes from with us inside a person. And those are the things that give us an idea of how at peace or not at peace, how whole or not whole an individual is. But this is not about judgment. We tend to hear things like this and further in the gospel. So many times Jesus making a judgment or calling us to be judges, which is why in another part of the gospel, Jesus says, judge not and you will not be judged. Because when you become a follower, when you take on some kind of a tenet or a value or something that is a religious teaching and it's very, very important to us, or anything that is important to us, we can become very, very defensive and holding on to those things, especially when we feel attacked. If somebody is questioning our way of life, we are threatened, like ISIS. If somebody is questioning our belief system, we get defensive, like some of the variations of Christianity that would have us really go back to the time of the Puritans and not advance with the culture and with the development of people. If we hold on to something and cling so strongly to something that gives us nurture and gives us a purpose in life, we are threatened anytime somebody raises an alternative or somebody challenges it with the exact opposite. That's a natural reaction. What Jesus is talking about here, I think in the context of this gospel, is go back to whoever is not against us is for us. And one of the things that I saw, and we watched a great deal of what's happened with the Pope in the last few days, for no other reason except for me, I thought it was interesting to see what has developed since I left, but also to see what hasn't changed since I left. And a lot has not changed. But one of the things that dramatically struck me was that here's a guy, whether we believe in the Pope or the position, or we have lots of hates about the Romans, Catholics, there's a whole thing in the New York Times the other day, by the way, taken up by a Christian church. The whole full page of the New York Times. I can't imagine what this cost them to do. With lots of print, going through the book of Revelations and making a very strong argument about why Rome, the Roman Church, is the presence of Satan. I was reading it and I was getting, what? In this day and age? Anyway, that stuff goes on, and there are a lot of people who would take that kind of a position. What this Pope has done, not as the Pope gives him some credibility. For some people, for others, it's the opposite. He's a man, if you watch his biography, he's a man who grew up in Argentina in a very small, dumpy, dirt road kind of situation back in the 1930s. And he's a guy that went off to school and started thinking about what he wanted to do with his life. And he was headed to medical school. And he had a collection of books that his mother found in his room. And they had nothing to do with medicine. They had everything to do with philosophy and theology. And so she questioned him about it. And he said, I'm really thinking about this. And she chided him and said, you're supposed to be a doctor. And you will pursue the doctor. Anyway, long story short, when he came to high school and post-high school into the college age, when he was 17, 18 years old, even though he had a girlfriend, he said, I have a call, I think, to be a priest. And like many of us who made that decision, when you make that decision, there's some people that go, oh, yay, yay. And there are other people go, fie on you. I lost a whole career, promised to me, paid in full, to be a doctor by a woman that I grew up with as a kid, from the time I was a little kid until I was in high school. And up until the day I was ordained, there was a trust fund for my medical education and all the things I would ever need, and I would inherit everything she owned, which wasn't a whole lot, but back then it was a lot, because she had no children. She was a maiden lady, and she kind of took charge of caring for me. And the day I was ordained, the whole thing was reversed. She never talked to me again, and that was the end of our relationship. And when she was in a nursing home, I went to visit her, and she wouldn't even look at me. So you join the priesthood is not something that everybody's going to go rah, rah, rah. But he did. And then he decided while he was in the seminary that he wanted to become a Jesuit. And as a Jesuit, he did very well. The Jesuits are considered to be the thinkers, the real thinkers in Catholicism, because they challenge some of the doctrine, they challenge some of the machinations of church structure, etc. But he decided he wanted to be a Jesuit. And he was very good at it. And so they made him the head of the seminary. And while he was the head of the seminary, he did what you would do with the head of the seminary. He taught these kids to be themselves and to think for themselves and all those kind of things, which made him the enemy of some of the hierarchy in the Jesuits, which happens over and over again in those structures. And so they banned him to Argentina in the ghetto for 2 years he was there. And it was the best 2 years of his life because it gave him the time to understand who he really was. And it was there that he started to realize that the only thing that matters is not that you're bringing God to people, but that you're being God for people. And so he had a ministry of visiting people in their homes, of visiting the sick, of taking care of the broken, of supporting the people in the ghettos, however he could, finding jobs, those kind of things. And then thereafter he was made, because of that, somebody in Rome recognized that this guy has something special. They were looking for a new bishop down there, so they made him the bishop. Then he became the Archbishop of Argentina, and from there he became the cardinal. The whole time that this man has journeyed, from the time he left the ghetto until this very day, his whole attitude is, I am not about being church, because he said, we are building churches. He talked in St. Patrick's and he said, migrants built these churches and built these walls, and we celebrate that. But the purpose of the church is not to build walls, it's to tear walls down. And so his attitude has always been, whatever there was he could do to bring God to the people, especially the ones on the fringes, because they're the ones that have no recognition. They're the ones that have no place in society. In fact, society puts them there by the structures that we have in place. That's a hard one, but it's true. So the structures are there, the people are out there, and he's out there. So it wasn't an act at all, if you saw any of this, that he was looking at the crippled and holding the babies and blessing the people who were in wheelchairs. The man who was totally disfigured because he had the disease, they took off a huge tumor off of his face, etc. I mean, the picture is just an incredible statement. But it's not powerful because he's the Pope. It's powerful because this man is so open to God, and he allows God to work through him. All he is, and he will say this, all I am is the vehicle. This is not about me. This is about God and God's people. And from that place, whenever he talked about a policy or some of the things about the culture, when he talked about the immigration problem, and he talked about marriage, and he talked about birth control, and he talked about all those issues that people were bringing up, it was not because he was saying, this is what you have to do. He was saying, you, with all of those things, are to bring God to the world. Unlike the previous two popes, he didn't condemn the people who had abortions. He understands people do what they do with reason. And it is for them to deal with God. What they need from us is the presence of God. A God who is not judging, a God who is not anything more but compassion. We sang it in the opening hymn. Let us be a compassionate community. There are lots of problems in the world today. We have lots of them. Dave brought one up. Addiction. I never heard about addiction until I was probably in eighth grade, because back then, the only ones that did drugs, and alcohol wasn't considered a drug. The only ones who did drugs were the gangsters in New York that you saw in the movies with Humphrey Bogart and Edward G. Robinson and those kind of people. The film noir crowd. Today, it's rampant. Our society is, I think it is almost fosters this kind of thing because of the denial of our connection with each other, because we are isolated, because we have become a society of individuals. It's all about me. There's a wonderful commercial, not wonderful, but it hit me between the eyes, the Korean Airlines. Their new ad suggests, it's all about you. It's all about you. And they're showing you eating sushi and all this other kind of stuff on their planes. It's all about you. And that's the system that we live in. We have come to a time when, as people in this country, and I'm not talking about government, I'm talking about individuals, we become a group of people who like our solitude. We don't like having people near us. We don't like having people around us. We don't like strangers. We don't like people we don't know. We don't like people we don't like. We don't even know if they care about us, like us, or don't. Our comedic system, our writing system, the papers, the spin doctors, you read their stuff, and it's all bias coming from individuals, all of them suggesting either it's a good thing we're doing or it's a bad thing we're doing. But nobody steps away and says, well, what is happening here? What really is going on? Instead of calling each other names, what are we doing to figure it out? And I think we are so polarized because everything around us is polarized. You can't have some person make a comment on television without 25 people on the other side screaming on the other end. Wonderfully good, solid thinking gets destroyed on some radio programs because somebody has a blocked mind or has a closed attitude and just will not hear that there's something more. This man told us, we are in a position, all of us, we call ourselves Christian people, we are in a position, each one of us, in our own world at least, to step away from things and to become more objective about them. Not be so quick to make a judgment, not so quick to push people away. Don't categorize people, don't put them in pigeonholes. Don't seal them in the tomb in which they built over their lifetime because they just may be able to change and give a gift that would be depriving us, would be a deprivation for us if we wall them in. What do we do with the creativity around us? You know, a lot of us in my age group, every time a new nanopod or iPod or one of these new pod things comes out, we all get nervous. Some of us have already stepped back far enough, we don't want to get involved in it at all. Don't even tell me about a computer, however big or small. I don't want it on my wrist. I don't want it in my house. I will not have it in my car. On the other hand, we're living in an age where there is the possibility of communication that has never, ever been as intense and with the potential of doing great things as we have now. Unfortunately, in some ways, it gets buried under things like Facebook and Twitter and tweeting and all those kind of things, which drive us all nuts. But do you realize how important it is for us to see the power of communication? What we say to each other really does matter. And I'm the first one to admit that I don't always say perhaps what I should say. And I am confess to you openly that I'm not the person that I'm talking about being able to do all these things. I'm not. But that shouldn't stop us from recognizing that this gospel, this is not for Christians. It's not even for Jews. It is for the human family to step away and to recognize that there are values about our humanity, there are values about our living on this planet, there are values and good things that we have yet to discover among ourselves. And we find all kinds of reasons in the name of God, in the name of ourselves, to stop it from happening. Remember I told you the story about a person who went to confession? Whether they believe in confession or not is not important. Went to confession and went in and said, you know, Father, I don't have any real problems. I don't have any real sins. You know, nothing major. The only thing I do, you know, I talk about my neighbor sometimes. And the priest asked, well, you know, does that have any effect on the neighbor? and giving it some momentary thought, said, well, yeah, I guess it does have some effect. I guess maybe some of the things I say are a little exaggerated. And who do you say these things to? Well, whoever's there to listen. And so the priest said, well, I'll give you forgiveness, but first I want you to do through your penance. And your penance is to take a feather pillow and go out to the mountain outside of town. And I want you to do it on a windy day. And in the wind, I want you to cut the pillow open and shake every feather that you can get out of that pillowcase. Shake it all out and watch where all the feathers go. Let the wind take it as far as the wind will take it. Your penance then is go back and collect all those feathers. When we say things about each other, we have no control about where it goes. And there's no taking it back. So whether it's your eye or your hand or your foot or my tongue or my brain and my thoughts or my soul and my prejudices or my attitude that is closed, I affect the world around me. We can't solve the problem of ISIS. No one of us here probably has the energy or the potential, or even the interest of addressing the serious problems of crime and murder in our cities, or gun laws and control, or proliferation of drugs, or the sex abuses, and all the things that take place. But each one of us does have the possibility of stepping away from every moment and objectively asking ourselves, what I am about to say, does it build community or tear it down? What I'm about to do, will it enhance human life or tear it apart? What I'm about to enter or vote on or dialogue with or enter into some kind of relationship, is this going to positively affect not only me and do something for me, but more especially and more importantly, is it going to do something better and good for those around me? That's the attitude that makes this Pope, this individual, this human person, a man of God. Whether he was the Pope, or he was a factory worker, or he was still being a bouncer at the bar when he was a kid, before he became a priest. The power of his presence and his message is there for all of us. The most powerful image I saw as a hopeful sign in all of his trip was at the Twin Towers Memorial, when he stood together with a Muslim, various forms of Christianity, Eastern Orthodox, Jews, Baha'is, an atheist, some agnostics, and all the mishmash of people who were there. And together, they were able to pray to God, a blessing upon our world. If our church is going to survive, that's where we have to be. If this church is going to survive, that's where you and I have to be. But it's not about surviving as a church. It's about becoming what we have been called to become. We must be God to each other and to everyone whose lives we touch. It's a challenge, but there's no other way. Amen.